Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains and citizens elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, not much. Just have my head on a swivel trying to keep up on everything that's happening anymore.
Well, so tell us what's happening. I know we had a USDA report yesterday, which, again, I don't even know what it was. I don't even care, but go ahead and tell us what's going on. Yeah.
Well, you didn't miss anything by not looking at that. I can tell you that much. I mean, from an overall standpoint, the USDA came out with some new numbers. They surprised some folks with their soybean number. They actually increased crush a little bit, lowered a couple of other usage numbers, seed and residual, nothing too fancy there, and actually lowered carryout by about 5 million bushel, which doesn't mean really anything, but it did reverse the recent trend, which has been to cut exports substantially and increase carryout, which is what traders were expecting going into the report, that we would see another increase in carryout. So that was, I guess you could say, supportive, but I don't really know how you could get bullish or get excited over a 550 million bushel carryout projection. They did lower Argentina's production like we expected, you know, down pretty substantially. I think that they kind of were aggressive on that move, and that should cover the bulk of needed adjustments here in the short term. But they raised Brazil's a little bit. I mean, it just really, from an overall standpoint, it wasn't a whole lot of anything. We saw corn carryout increase slightly like we expected due to a small cut in feed and residual use and some food usage. Wheat carryout increased again due to a cut in feed use, but from an overall standpoint, as to be expected in an April report, it was a whole lot of nothing, you know, from an overall production outlook or supply and demand outlook, and now we get to start paying attention to weather in the grain markets, because we're supposed to be planting corn in a lot of areas and planting spring wheat in the northern plains. And obviously that's not really happening in a lot of places, because we're on day 95 of January, I think. So we're just kind of waiting to see how the weather pattern will affect that. And that's going to be the game we're going to start to play, it looks like.
All right, well, first, before we go further, explain to everybody, because some don't know, what is carryout?
Carryout is our ending stock, so our leftovers at the end of the year. So every year you have your leftovers from the year prior. So it's totally normal to have, you want to have a reasonable amount of padding, you could call it, you know, your bushel amounts left sitting, you know, because the marketing year for corn and soybeans ends September 1st. But reality is most of harvest doesn't start until October 1st across much of the Corn Belt. So you'll have a little bit of carry out at the end of the marketing year, and it begins to be referred to as beginning stocks or carry in. And it's just what's left over when you use up all of 1 year's production or whatever production's left over that you don't use, I guess you could say, at the end of the year. And that's what we tend to focus on. You know, as fundamental traders in the grain markets, we tend to focus on how much is going to be left over at the end of every year and how, you know, how much room you have for error going into the following year.
Okay. So what's with all the exporting right now? All of a sudden, it seems like the trade war was a way for the Argentinians and for everybody else to start buying some more stuff down here. What do you think?
Yeah, apparently, you know, and the weirdest thing is the price hasn't moved. It's not really one of those things where you've seen the substantial, we're actually, you know, at or slightly above where we were when the announcements of the tariffs from the Chinese were put into place. And I mean, I mentioned it a week ago, I think, when you and I had talked, and we talked about it on Twitter quite a bit here this past week, that the Brazilian farmer, upon realizing that he was going to be the quote-unquote only provider of soybeans to China and, you know, in theory, the global market to a certain extent, suddenly realized that he wasn't charging enough for them. And so you saw the cash market explode to the upside in Brazil, and the offers, you know, basically disappeared. So, you know, when you become the only group that's able to provide a service or a good, you know, of course, supply and demand, the theory of supply and demand kicks in, and suddenly your price increases. And so that was what we saw, is the Brazilian farmer or the Brazilian agribusinesses down there not only increased their price, but for a while there, it was almost impossible to get any sort of offer for shipments in the May time frame. And because of that, the U.S. market not only firmed up a little bit from a basis standpoint, which is the difference between cash price and futures, like we've talked about before, you saw that cash value increase in beans, but you also saw other folks coming our way because we had offers, we have available supply, we're willing to ship them, we're competitive. I mean, we're competitive into China, even with the increase that you saw in Brazil, even with the tariff in place, we were competitive. And so you saw that happen first and foremost, and then we've seen Argentina also come in and start buying some new crop beans. So they have had a pretty substantial drought and production issue. They've got a lot of beans that have been sitting in grain bags, which isn't the most ideal way to store a soybean by any means. It's just you know, what it sounds like, almost like a giant industrial trash bag where they put their soybeans and let them sit, you know, out on the back 40 or whatever. And so they have a lot of what you would probably expect to be damaged beans. With beans, you can blend out. You can take the lower quality damaged crop and mix it in with a higher quality non-damaged crop and still produce a reasonable product when it comes to meal or oil, which Argentina is going to need. So you have that playing a role. That could be a factor as to why Argentina is stepping in and buying some beans. But you could also see what we call arbitrage. So it could be one of those things where Argentina could buy U.S. beans without ever intending on taking them into their own border. They could buy U.S. beans and still sell them to China, and have it be what we call FOB, you know, a U.S. port of some sort. So there's plenty of ways in the cash market, which is what I live in and live in and breathe in, is the actual physical bushel trade. There's plenty of ways around tariffs, for one. You know, it's, we could sell beans to Argentina, who could then sell them to China, and they still leave our port to go to China without being impacted by a tariff. So you're seeing a lot of really interesting developments that, you know, that combined with this whole idea of inflation being introduced into the outside market structure, we're seeing a lot of support come into play, you know, in soybeans. We really haven't seen the market want to move too awful much lower at this point in time. And even in the face of all of the news stories we seem to be getting here from a day-to-day basis.
Well, it's kind of like you and I talked about, or at least I talked about, I said that the trade wars was a bunch of BS to begin with. I still mm-hmm. stand by that. There are ways to do a lot of things. And at the end of the day, which we will talk about when we come back for the break, China can't do without us and we can't do without China. So they're going to work something out, but we are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, at Twitter at goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, always brings today. She's bringing Susie Sunshine to the show. And of course, it's always good to have her on. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day. Help us get to our goal of 1 million downloads a month. So I need you to just get there and download as much as you can. And of course, don't forget to get Bubba's daily update, which is just me recapping the markets every day at the close. And I send you a video for free. All you have to do is go to bubbatrading.com. And you can load up you can sign up for the update. It's free, no credit card required, nothing. Just something I'd like to share with everybody, what you're thinking. It's like getting tomorrow's newspaper today. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be back with more from Angie Setzer after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Welcome
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bo Horwitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains on Twitter, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And Angie, so we talked about the trade wars, and last Wednesday was the big bottoming process. And as I said, and I think you agreed, that it really didn't mean a heck of a lot. And here we are, corn is near highs, and wheat is near highs, and soybeans have come from nowhere. And all of a sudden, there's not a fear of trade wars. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously there's still this fear of trade war because it seems to be a common narrative that we're seeing right now from industry groups, you know, ag industry groups who are paid to, quote unquote, keep the farmer's best interest in mind and want to fight against this because of historical, what we've seen in the past and how they feel it may end up in the future. But the reality is, yeah, I mean, China, they've got to eat. They need to. They're smart business people, to a certain extent, and they're going to do the things that they have to do in order to provide their civilians and their growing middle class. I mean, that was a conversation that we had prior, where you've seen their middle class explode, nearly 70% over the last two decades, or it will. It's expected to by the year 2022. And so, there's a lot of moving parts to this and a lot of developments that, are unprecedented. So it's easy to say, based on what happened in the 80s or something of that nature, that this could be damaging. The jury's still out. We'll have to see. But I had a lot of questions, over the last week of people on the outside looking in saying, well, don't we need to walk this back? What do we do? How do we do it? What are we going to do? And it's just, no, you can't. At this point in time, it's like I said a week ago, we jumped out of the airplane. We've got to hope that our parachute helps us land safely on the ground. And so far, it's doing its job. We saw China's president come out and say that he's willing to look at more open markets and the reduction of tariffs on automobiles and to investigate and take into consideration the intellectual theft that's taking place. I mean, obviously, they're working on trying to come to a solution of some sort. And I think we'll see it. I think we'll find a way to be able to work together. It's amazing to me right now. This isn't a new development, but it feels as though it's getting worse and worse is the way that our politics but the way politics is being allowed, to skew, the flow of information. And I understand, that that's not new, and maybe I'm going off into the weeds on what we normally talk about. But these articles that I'm reading right now, you can almost cut the political.
The rhetoric is ridiculous, and that's what was my next question. So you're going right to where I wanted to go, and my question is, is all these lobbyists and all these congressmen and all these people from the Midwest, they're just doing stuff for themselves. They don't give a rat's about the farmers. They care about themselves, and they are not driving the business, because as we can see by the price action, the markets are doing just fine, and they're higher than they were before this started, and they've reached the levels they were before the last USDA report. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, and that's my struggle. I mean, it's this incessant hand wringing that we have going on right now, and politicians that are coming out and they're allowing their dislike of the current administration to cloud their understanding or view of what's currently taking place. And it's frustrating on my end. Is there long-term concerns? Sure. I mean, is it possible that over the next decade, if we were to see tariffs put into place and remain in place, that you could see the Brazilian farmer be encouraged to increase his production? Sure. But that's going to happen anyway. China is working to build infrastructure, and they're investing in infrastructure in Brazil. They're working on, establishing business, ag businesses in Brazil. They're working on establishing, and they have established, agricultural businesses in the U.S. I mean, that's not new. I mean, China is going to constantly be looking to evolve and change their way of sourcing food, because they have to. Again, like I said, I mean, the growth in their middle class is extreme. The growth in and middle class and wealth and population, you know, around the world is amazing. You not only have China, you have India that's expected to grow at 7.6% over the next decade. You've got developing countries, you know, around the world that are expected to grow at 4.6%, which is double the growth expected in already developed nations. So you have these changes in, you know, food needs and demands. You know, as people get more money, they want to increase their intake of meat and other sources of protein. That's not a surprise. And so could we see a change in an increase in Brazilian production capabilities? Yes. Could you see the tariffs kind of push that, you know, it's maybe speed up that process? Perhaps,
no,
but the rhetoric we're hearing is foolish to me.
No, it won't happen. It's not going to happen. And this is the problem, in my opinion. You know, I listen to the news all the time because that's what I do. I'm involved in it. I'm on, and I hear these pundits and anchors talking about, oh my God, it's such a crisis. We've got the grains and soybeans, and I keep tweeting to them, but soybeans are higher than they were. And so is corn, and so is everything else. So why do you continue to create fear? In fact, I tweeted out the other day. Yes. I said directly to one of them. I said, yes, why are you creating fear when there is none? I mean, Bart Chilton, who's another guy that's it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be smooth all over. I go, BS. This is not going to be a problem because it's going to resolve itself. Number one, the markets will fix it. And that's the end of the day. Why are we letting these people ruin everything? It's like they want to see the markets go crazy and they don't want to admit that the markets are harder than they were. What do you say to that?
Oh, I agree. Like they want to see rural America suffer, because if rural America suffers, then that means that the person that they didn't want to be in office, you know, there was a reason behind the cheerleading against the Trump administration. Believe me, I am not a Trump fan. I never really have been, you know, but that doesn't mean that I'm against the betterment of the U.S. You know what I mean? It is the same thing. I was not an Obama fan. I was not a W fan. I kind of am against, I guess you could say, politicians in general, but I'm sure as hell not against the betterment or the improvement of America in general. And so for me, if it benefits us, I will sit here and say it. And I put that out there last week. I've never been a fan of the tariff. I'm a more of a let's not rock the boat kind of person, even though obviously the boat needs to be rocked. I mean, I could admit that. But they're here. We've done it. So why on earth are the people that really have no clue how the farmer, the U.S. farmer, you know, establishes price or protects risk or anything of that nature, why are they, you know, trying to, like you said, incite fear? And that's exactly what you're seeing. And it's foolishness. It's political rhetoric. It's a way to get attention placed on someone. I mean, it's a continuous thing. I said it last night, and I actually had someone who works in media say to me, you know, well, be prepared to continue to be frustrated by this because it's a very important story. And I said, well, how is it an important story? Well, the rural farmer needs to know how these, you know, what this tariff, you know, how this can impact their livelihood going forward. They already know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's so many other factors impacting their livelihood that perhaps we should pay attention to that we aren't. You know, you and I have talked about it 1,000 different times before. Healthcare costs, for one, that's limiting a farmer's ability to obtain return on investment far more than any tariffs at this point in time has. And like you said, we're trading up right now on November 18th soybeans. We're within 9 cents of an all-time contract high. On corn, we're within 4 cents of the contract high. We're within 5 cents of the contract high for December 17 corn. So we're within 5 cents of the high that was put in place all of last year for December 17 corn. And the American farmer, if he's truly worried about what's going to happen with policy as we move ahead, he has every ability in the world to protect his risk that he's putting into the ground right now if he or she wants.
Hold that thought, because we got more. This is the Bubba Show. Top of Horrors with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And don't forget to download the Bubba Show every single day at libertytalk.fm. You can get that. And of course, the Sporting Edge and our new show, Crypto Investor X. We'll be back after the break with more from Angie Setzer, the goddess herself. This is the Bubba Show, Top of Horowitz. We're coming right back to you after the break with more with Angie. The Bubba Show, Top of Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie, so you're going off about that stuff. And I say, what about the damage that's been done to the farmer for the last 30 years? Forget about prices. Oh, yeah. Let's look at the price. Let's forget about the trade wars. But what about what they've done to their pricing to begin with? Explain that to me and everybody else.
Well, I mean, that's the thing it just amazes me that all of a sudden we've decided to focus on what's going on in rural America. You know, like they really honestly care, you know, and I'm not saying that everyone's completely void of compassion or something of that nature for the rural citizens of the U.S., but reality is the laws and regulations and requirements and things of that nature that have been put into place over the last 30 years, like you said, you know, have really impacted your rural citizens in an extremely negative way. You know, I mentioned healthcare costs, and any farmer, I think at this point in time, if you were to put out a poll, would tell you that the cost of healthcare, health insurance, health insurance in general and being required to purchase it and all of these things is far more in the front of their mind as a concern than any type of trade war at this point in time. And I think for good reason. I mean, there's a lot of other things that are really impacting a farmer's ability to produce and produce at a profitable level. Look at the mergers and acquisitions that have taken place in agriculture, the ability to manipulate a lot of the input costs of farmer, you know, the input side of things that a farmer has to look at when it comes to chemicals, fertilizer, seed. I mean, your ability to see and introduce new companies into the global or the at least the domestic marketplace has gotten tougher and tougher. You know, the ability to enter into a market structure anymore is darn near impossible. And that is allowing a lot of these input companies, and you'll see it all the time, where they're able to, you know, manipulate to a certain extent the value of the goods they're selling. You know, if you're one of two providers of potash in North America, and suddenly your price of potash is dropping, you're easily able to shut the supply line off long enough to see the price firm up again and you become profitable. Seed costs. I mean, it's ridiculous right now that what we've seen, you know, happened, to the U.S. farmer. And all of a sudden, just because we have a president in place that not everyone is a fan of, especially those who are a part of the status quo from the government side of things, you know, suddenly it's, oh, we can point out this reason as to why this is a bad deal. You know, they're not benefiting monetarily from a giant lobbyist organization, I guess, when it comes to applying tariffs onto the Chinese economy. So they'll they'll suddenly decide that they're going to start to speak out. So, you know, it's frustrating, and it's frustrating for a lot of farmers that this is the narrative that they're being shoved down their throat. Are there a few farmers out there that, you know, perhaps have some extreme concerns with what could happen? Sure, but you know, from an overall standpoint, from the majority of folks that I talk to, they're aware of the risks in place. They're aware of how to manage those risks. And they're going to, you know, they're of the mindset that we have to let this play out, because to walk away now or to back down now, now that we're in this deep, would actually be far worse than any other thing out there that we could do.
Well, here's what I think. Okay. If I look back in history and I look at the price of oil, okay, other dollar denominated commodities, and I look at the price of corn, all right, well, how come corn has not gone up with oil? Okay. Yeah. How come soybeans have not gone up with oil? How come wheat has not gone up with oil? Okay. So why are the farm products always these stepsons or stepchilds of everything, and they just continue to get pounded when everything else is going up? So explain to me how that works and how that functions with what's going on. I'd like to know what your opinion is, because this goes back to, it couldn't get any worse if there was a trade war, because we're already at ridiculously low prices to begin with.
Yeah, from a comparative standpoint, you know, if you look at the inflationary pressure, the cost of living increases and things like that versus where we're at pricing wise right now, yeah, I mean, we're already on, you know, we've seen multi-year lows put in place here over the last 5 years and markets out there. And, you know, we saw it happen in oil. Oil backed way off, but that took all of, what, 6 months to see a pretty significant correction come into play. And so, yeah, I mean, the USDA has never been shy about the fact that their job is to kind of maintain steady food prices and you know, protect the citizens of the world when it comes to volatility and things like that. So I think that plays a role in it. I mean, obviously, we have produced the crops that are large enough to cover the demand that we have, you know, not only from a domestic standpoint, but globally. So, you know, obviously the market feels as though these prices or these crops are somewhat fairly priced based on the information that we have, which the information that we have is provided by the USDA. So take it with a grain of salt. You know, I think one of the things you start talking about oil, the thing that amazes me more than anything, and we did see it start to come up a little bit on Twitter here on Monday, is the backroom dismantling of the RFS via RIN waivers or RIN obligation waivers being given to some of these relatively large refiners. I mean, we're starting to say that a refiner with, you know, several billion, I think it was $100 billion worth of revenue in 2017 is suffering hardships caused by having to purchase RINs. Are you freaking kidding me? You know, so that is one thing that if you really want to, you know, wind me up and have me start talking about what's really frustrating me, it's not this idea of a trade war. That doesn't concern me at all. It's the idea that we can, you know, have policies in place in order to help reduce the cost of fuel to the American people and provide a high octane, relatively low pollution product via ethanol into the marketplace, and we are ignoring or dismantling because we want to maintain that big oil, you know, not only receives the cushy sort of subsidies and tax credits and all of these things that they receive, but they also get to kind of find loopholes. You know, so it's just one of those things where I guess it shows you where the importance lies right now.
I got to interrupt you for a minute. It lies around the money. This goes back to the lobbyists and the government that screws the American people. That's exactly what I said. Now, again, I go back and I look and I say, okay, 15 years ago, okay, oil was at $31. Today it's $66. 15 years ago, corn was at, hold on, I got to pull it up here real quick. I lost my place because I'm missing something. But 15 years ago, corn was at $2.49. And when was ethanol? When did it become part of the price of corn?
2006 or 2008 was when you saw
that was when the $1.50 kind of got added to the price of corn. So if you look at corn back in 2003, 15 years ago, it was $2.40. So if you add on the $1.50 for that, it would make it $3.90, which is exactly where it is today. What happened to the price inflation? So this is what gets me and where these guys continue with their BS. So how bad could a trade war be for the American farmer?
not any worse than allowing big oil to kind of trounce upon the ethanol market. Actually, you know, big oil having its way at this point in time would be far worse for the American farmer, simply because, you know, not only would you see diesel costs increase, which is a cornerstone of production costs, you know, you would also see other energy costs increase, which natural gas tends to be a direct, you know, has a direct correlation, or at least a somewhat direct correlation when it comes to fertilizer costs. And so, you know, I think folks' focus is misdirected right now when it comes to hollering about the trade war sort of thing. You know, really, when it comes down to it, we should be more so hollering about the fact that we're allowing an already large group of you know, highly rich. You know, the oil industry is not known for, you know, supporting paupers. And I'm not, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not anti-oil by any means. I have tons of friends that have to leave my hometown to go and work on pipelines and things like that to be able to provide for their family. So I'm not against, you know, having domestic oil production and things of that nature. But, you know, we have a policy in place. And yes, ethanol has the ability to stand on its own if given a level playing field. You know, I get, you know, I'm not a huge government program sort of person. And so it's always kind of an inner conflict for me when it comes to being, you know, extremely supportive of RFS and then have people say, well, what about government programs? But the fact remains, you know, big oil versus what they call now big corn, which I think is extremely laughable. You know, that's not a fair fight. It's not even close to a fair fight when it comes down to it. And so the idea of allowing, you know, big oil to kind of trounce all over the American farmer, like I said, that's more of an issue right now to me than any sort of you know, trade war. I'm using air quotes.
That's all right. It's the same as big tobacco. And until they let big tobacco figure out a way out of the tobacco industry, that's the problem. This goes back to who really runs the country, the lobbyists. And that's the problem with what we have. It's the same thing we're seeing with every big deal. And that's even like this big Facebook meeting in Washington. What a waste of time and money. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with feisty Angie Setzer and the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, don't forget about our high school program. If you want to help us out, we're in 450 high schools now, looking to get the more. And all you have to do is go to Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading, and we can help grow this program and get rid of some of these people out there that have no understanding of the markets. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz will be right back with more from Angie after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, you know, again, obviously we've been talking about certain things, and in the meantime, prices are going higher, which you and I both thought would go higher. And you talk about weather markets. Now, I think that's one of the problems that farmers and producers have is they try to follow the weather because the markets are too fast today. This is not your daddy's market, right? This is a different market now because it's faster.
Yeah.
Because you've got people that have weather screens up. I mean, you've got some farmers that are probably as good as the regular meteorologists that are watching the radar, watching everything. So they already know. So the information is pretty much already priced into the market well ahead of the time. Again, it's not the old days. You know, I mean, just a quick example. I mean, when the Bay of Pigs happened with John F. Kennedy, that was around for 2 weeks before anybody knew about it. Now, you know about it in 10 minutes. So why do we focus on the weather when it's not going to help us anyways? And it's only going to cost us money because we're going to get over enthused and try to buy if it's bad weather and then get murdered as we do every July 4th.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's it's a gripe that I've had for a while. It was a big gripe that I had last year, you know, where everyone all of a sudden had determined that the crop in Iowa and in other areas was burning up and we were going to see tremendously low yields. I mean, I talked to a producer the other day that, you know, someone last summer basically convinced him not only to buy calls, but to finance it by selling puts. Well, guess what? The market dropped 70 cents and that it really didn't work too hot for him on that side of things. And all because of weather. You know, the thing that we're looking at right now when it comes to weather is there is a big implication in start date, so they say, when it comes to for me right now, the only thing I'm really paying attention to is spring wheat acres in the Northern Plains, because that was what the USDA, why the USDA did not increase soybean acres like folks were expecting. So, you know, like I said earlier, a lot of folks were anticipating that at the end of March, we would see the USDA project 92 million acres of soybean plantings in the United States. They didn't. They instead put it out at 89. Fact of the matter is, even at 50 bushels to the acre, you're still only looking at 150 million bushel swing in overall production, which isn't small, but it's not a huge, it should not be as huge a factor as what some folks allowed it to be. Right now, there's a lot of snow pack still in the Northern Plains. A lot of the frost line still, you know, there's still a significant amount of frost in the ground, and they're anticipating more snow this weekend. So weather, to that extent, should play a role, simply in the sense that at this point in time, we should, you know, probably we will start to see farmers make a decision here over the next week to 2 weeks over, you know, not planting spring wheat and instead probably looking at planting soybeans. But obviously, the market's not paying attention to that too much because you've got wheat down and beans up right now. So, yeah, for the most part, the other thing that is kind of funny when people start to talk about weather and panic over planting delays, especially when it comes to corn, technology anymore, I mean, all we need is a window of opportunity, and we can get more than half the corn crop planted in a week. There's some folks that will argue with me on that. I invite them to come out and spend some time in Iowa during planting season and see the size of the equipment, the scope of the equipment, and the fact that guys are willing to run 24 hours a day. You know, and so the ability to get stuff planted, the idea of a weather scare due to planting, you know, at this early is foolish to me. Now, we get a week or so after Mother's Day and we still have snow on the ground, let's talk. But, you know, the likelihood of that happening is probably pretty limited at this point. So yeah, weather, we know so much more. I mean, when I first started trading, it was Skilling's forecast. So you could see the market move based on what Tom Skilling had to say, you know, at noon Chicago time. That would be the summer market. Oh, must be Skilling's forecast was dry. The corn market's up 2 cents. You know what I mean? Now it's when the GFS model is released. You can tell how stuff is traded just simply based on when the new weather model is released at 10:30 in the morning or whatever. But to be heavily focused on one issue anymore in this industry or in these markets is foolishness. You're just wasting your time, because there's so many other moving parts to it right now that, you know, one day you can focus on weather, maybe Tuesday it's a weather market, but by Thursday it's something totally different. So I always tell my customers not to waste their time on trying to get hyper focused on one fundamental factor in this thing.
It sounds like you agree with me, but I can't really tell.
I do. I agree with you. Focusing entirely on what, I mean, there's a reason that, you know, if it impacts production, then yeah, but like you said, for the most part, we already have an understanding of what's going to impact production before it happens. I mean, we knew about the Argentina drought, you know, long before it happened. It's just a matter of whether it comes to fruition or not. You know what I mean? Like, we were talking about how dry it was in Argentina in January, and the pattern never shifted. But the other thing that you're really looking at is forecasting weather is just as complicated as forecasting price direction. So you marry the two of them together and good luck.
Well, actually, it's easier to the price direction because the markets do leave a footprint. So that does make it easier to kind of dictate what's going on. So we got higher prices. I say we make new highs in wheat and in corn. I still got a little bit concerned about soybeans, but I say wheat and corn make new highs this year. What do you say?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree completely. We've put in a reasonable foundation when it comes to corn sales so far. There's a certain amount of risk you want to protect as a farmer. They've got some risk covered via crop insurance, of course, if they bought those policies or if they've decided to, you know, cover their downside via options or something of that nature. But I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see December 18 corn try to close the gap that was left by December 16 corn. Friday night, you know, in December 16, we had a Friday night close the end of June around 449 and three quarters, something of that nature. And it gapped lower Sunday night. We haven't been back since. So I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see these 18 try to close that up at some point this year. And I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, July 18 wheat try to trade up towards 550 or so. And so we've got targets in place accordingly. I'm not one to really try to forecast price from an overall standpoint, but we do have to make decisions about where we think the market will head in order to build marketing plans. And yeah, I think corn and wheat see new contract highs, and the way soybeans are trading right now, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see them try to test some much higher levels, you know, in the next couple, 3 weeks here, just because they can.
I agree with you 100%. I say that I would not be surprised at some point if things go the way I think, according to my thesis, I wouldn't be surprised to see a five in front of corn. How's that? But in the meantime, we've got oil going ballistic. Is that hurting the farmers right now?
You haven't necessarily seen it just yet, because I don't think we've seen it, you know, seeing a significant increase on ground level. At least at this point, that's been one of the positives of seeing the tractors remaining parked simply because of weather conditions. But if you see diesel, you know, increase substantially here as a result, which you should, right? I mean, it has already. I don't know to what extent that will hurt farmers. The energy markets in general, any increase that you see there will hurt farmers, because it'll increase your freight costs, you know, when it comes to providing inputs. It'll increase your input costs, because folks will tell you that fertilizer is heavily dependent upon where natural gas trades. And then just the flat use of diesel. I mean, you know, the farmers go through thousands of gallons of diesel fuel when it comes to planting time. So, you know, imagine a 50 cent or a dollar increase per gallon, and you just, you know, kind of really increase the cost per acre of production in order to get the crop planted.
Right. And unfortunately, they don't get the benefit of higher prices. And that's always the conundrum that I find to be a challenge. And of course, just quickly, let's talk about the meats real quick. I'd say they bottomed. I know you don't watch them that often, but I say they bottomed and they're going higher from here. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think so. I think the USDA, I mean, take it, of course, USDA, what does that mean? But
I can't say it on air. This is a G-rated show.
Right. That's what they've kind of indicated, you know, the same thing as what we've seen in the grain markets from a cash standpoint, which is, even if we're into a trade war, which I think a lot of folks are concerned about what would happen if we lost all of that Chinese demand, well, other people are going to supply China, meaning that their ability to supply the other demand in the world is, you know, less. So you've got a same amount of demand. It's just a matter of where it comes from. And so I think our export structure is going to be pretty good. I think you've seen some things that are indicative of perhaps strong markets going forward.
That's it. You're done. Andy Setzer, the goddess of grains. Thanks so much. It's always great to have you on. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoy it every time I'm on.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, right here at The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz. We'll see you later, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.